Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Patrick Fort.
And I'm Allison Bechtesh. It's opening week for the Colorado Legislature. We check in with party leaders about their predictions for the session.
Basalt will not share tax dollars with the developer at Willits Town Center.
Poet laureate Juan Felipe Herrera came through Aspen to share his bilingual and biographical poetry.
The ski season is going well. Skier visits are up compared to this time last year.
A ballot measure that may determine reallocation of funds, now reserved for the Wheeler Opera House, is getting another look.
And an iconic Aspen event turns 65.
That's coming up on Mountain Edition.
Colorado's annual legislative session began Wednesday with the usual pomp and ceremony and opening day speeches. Lawmakers also began to unveil their priorities for the next 4 months. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
The Capitol hummed with activity after the eight-month interim, and opening day brought a back-to-school vibe, with families and friends joining lawmakers in the chambers. Isaac Slade, the lead singer of the Denver-based rock band The Fray, sang the national anthem in the Senate, and lawmakers were greeted to spruced-up chambers.
Isn't this amazing?
That's Senate President Bill Cabman. Workers finished a $6 million two-year renovation project, uncovering a skylight at the top of each chamber and removing beige acoustic tiles to unveil vibrant color panels and ornate stenciling on the walls and ceiling. Cabman went on to add that the Capitol's beauty is just a small part of what it stands for.
And it is so much more than the granite. It's so much more than the steel and the brass and the marble. And this place on Brown's Bluff, this is the very symbol of the idea and ideals of freedom.
While his speech didn't focus on policy specifics, leaders in the House did. Democratic Speaker Dickey Lee Hollinghorst highlighted economic security and says no one who works hard should live in poverty or be unable to feed a family.
If you work hard, you deserve to take a vacation, save for retirement, and send your kids to college.
House Democrats are introducing bills that would allow parents to take unpaid time off from work to attend parent-teacher conferences and other school activities. Another bill aims to reorient college savings accounts to help less wealthy families. She also wants to focus on climate change prevention and broadband access.
One of the best ways to support rural Colorado is to double our efforts to bring high-speed internet to all areas of the state.
For his part, House Minority Leader Brian Del Grosso says he wants to reduce unnecessary business regulations and find ways in the budget to fund roads and put more money into education.
The reality is many of the problems we face are not the result of insufficient revenue, but rather a lack of prioritization.
Lawmakers will have the next 4 months to debate those priorities. Bills are already being introduced, but most legislative hearings won't begin until next week. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Basalt's town council has decided against sharing sales tax dollars with the developer at Willits Town Center. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher has the details.
Town council members turned down sharing up to $5 million in sales taxes with Mariner Real Estate Management. The developer asked for that financing in order to attract more business tenants, arguing it would in turn generate more sales taxes for the town of Basalt. City Council Member Gary Tenenbaum.
I really believe development should pay its own way.
The majority of the council agreed. Willits has struggled to fill all of its commercial space and faces a more than $10 million gap in financing the project. Council also didn't support allowing Mariner to require new Willits business tenants to charge more in sales taxes. Council did approve allowing Willits to build about 90,000 more square feet. Council member Rob Levitt said that seemed fair.
Because even though we can add 60,000 square feet of commercial and it might not get filled, I'm quite certain that our 15 or 16 units for affordable housing teachers will get filled.
Afterwards, resident Katie Schwerer said she hopes Mariner will end up not being able to build that out anyway.
Willits has a significant amount of approved and unbuilt square footage. Let's get that built out, then come back.
A representative of Mariner said Tuesday night that without the tax dollars, quote, what happens next is undetermined, but we're going to try our best. Council also heard comments about a petition to put a tax question on the spring ballot. Hundreds of signatures have been gathered in favor of purchasing the Pan and Fork property for $3 million. Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
Statewide skier visits were up 10% through December 31st compared to last season. Aspen Skiing Company is reporting even higher numbers. Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Zachariasen has the details.
According to industry group Colorado Ski Country USA, 21 member resorts reported higher attendance in the first half of the season compared to last year. So far, the numbers are a continuation of increasing skier traffic as the resorts reported record attendance figures in back-to-back years. Though it won't release full numbers because of proprietary reasons, SkiCo is about 13% ahead of last year. Company representatives are citing an early opening, good conditions, more season pass holders getting out there, and last-minute bookings. A skier visit represents a person participating in the sport of skiing or snowboarding for any part of one day at a mountain resort. The totals released Tuesday do not include any ski areas owned by Vail Resorts. Carolyn Zachariasen, Aspen Public Radio News.
Nestled in the hills and rural landscape of Missouri Heights is Cedar Ridge Ranch. As Aspen Public Radio arts reporter Patrick Fort reports, something very different is happening inside of their barn.
Yeah, so this is it.
Cedar Ridge Ranch is situated next to a few other ranches in Carbondale. There's horses and pigs, some other small animals too. The ranch belongs to the Johnson family, who came here from Chicago about 2 decades ago. They were happy at the ranch, but something was missing.
What we wanted to do is we wanted to share this facility, this place, this iconic, idyllic, beautiful location with more people than just horses.
So that's what Meryl Johnson did. This is her project. The ranch had already been raising animals. It helped supply the Roaring Fork Beer Company with grains. It was already a community-focused place. Meryl just had to make it a more artist-friendly space.
I Googled art studios and barns.
That's Pamela Johnson, Meryl's mom. She found a woman in New Hampshire who had converted her barn into artist studios.
And her farm was much more, it was a harder renovation, I think, than ours was.
They talked and got a better idea of how the Johnsons could achieve their goal of taking Cedar Ridge from animal space to art space. But the Johnsons still had a lot of work to do. Install plexiglass for windows in the stalls, put conduit and wiring into each studio.
The electric is really probably been the biggest.
Then, once the studios were ready, it was time to get people in them.
We just put it out on Craigslist of the studios because we didn't really want to force the subject. And truly, all the creatives that have just come organically and are embracing this larger vision and are just really, really psyched to be here.
As artists signed leases, they picked out the former horse stall they'd turn into a studio. The creatives could lay concrete, paint, or even knock down walls. They could decorate to their liking.
When I first got here, my neighbors were baby bunnies and rabbits and chickens and horses. But now there's humans, which is great.
Draper White was the first person to rent out a studio at Cedar Ridge. He takes pictures. He shoots video. He says that he was drawn to the space right away.
I think the location really was the biggest thing for me. Just being up in Missouri Heights and you have such incredible views of mountains. I mean, I live in town, but I don't have any of those views. And it's hard, I forget that I live here sometimes. And then I come up here and I'm totally checked out of my normal life.
Checked out because of the quiet and the lack of cell service. The same appealing elements have brought other artists to the studios too. Todd Hassel runs La Luz Art Studio out of one of the stalls with his girlfriend. He's originally from a small town in Texas, but lived in Denver for a while. Hassel always thought he was a city person.
There's no way I could live in the mountains. I love going up there. I love skiing. But here I am, and it's good. It's really cool. It's different than I ever imagined.
And there's this other thing.
The artist community is larger than I ever could have anticipated. Not that I went into it negatively, but I just went into it not knowing. And so the outcome of this last year for us has been amazing. And a lot of it has to do with the community.
Since the grand opening of the studios in August, they've had people from all walks of life come into the studios from as far away as Newcastle. Meryl Johnson says that there's no better outcome than what they have right now.
We just could not be happier. I mean, the horses are happy, the boarders are happy, everyone's happy and healthy, and it's been just a really, really wonderful transition.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
In An uptick in Aspen real estate sales means additional tax revenues are going to the Wheeler Opera House, and there's talk of spending that money in other ways. Allison Bechtesh reports.
Well ahead of its 2020 sunset, the Aspen City Council and the Wheeler Board of Directors have been kicking around options for the future of the real estate transfer tax dedicated to the city-owned building. City Manager Steve Barwick says excess funds could be used elsewhere in the community.
The City Council is talking about possibly repurposing a portion of that revenue because it's generating more money than the Wheeler needs just for its operations and its capital renovations.
A public meeting had been scheduled this week to gather ideas for new beneficiaries, with the idea being that the ballot initiative renewing the tax would include wording of how the excess money would be used. However, that meeting was canceled. Barwick says the brainstorming sessions will temporarily be pulled back at the Wheeler Board of Directors' request. Brian O'Neill is the chairperson of the board. He doesn't want the tax renewal question to get muddied if a debate begins about where the money could be reallocated.
Why don't we do it safely and take this first step? Because it really will have to come down, I believe, it will down to an issue. But you can't have many issues. You have a whole bunch of issues. You can't really resolve them all, and you'll lose that way.
Money goes into the fund when property is sold, which means it can be a volatile income stream. Some years it's $2 million, others it can go as high as $6 million. One half of 1% of the real estate sale is placed aside for the Wheeler and arts. While Barwick says new use could be almost anything as long as voters approve it, O'Neill sees a stricter parameter.
It certainly go for the arts. And what about the arts and how and in what way? And that we haven't really worked with.
Council will discuss whether to separate the ballot questions next month. O'Neill encourages voters to attend future meetings to ensure their voices are heard.
So if they don't want to say anything, well, it's their fault, and that's too bad. But I think we have, there's not many Aspenites that don't say anything.
The Colorado legislature kicked off the 2016 session this week. Over the next several months, lawmakers will debate everything from energy and water to the budget and schools.
State House reporter Benta Berkland spoke with legislative leaders about what could happen this session. Here, she talks with the House Minority Leader, Brian Del Grosso.
Joining us, we have House Minority Leader Republican Brian Del Grosso of Loveland. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We're coming into your third legislative session as Minority Leader. It's also leading into a presidential election year. How do you think that will impact things, and how will it be different compared to the previous session?
I think the big difference is when there's a presidential election, there's a politics overall just gets heightened. You hear a lot of stuff nationally, and so as a local legislator, you get asked about a lot of stuff that's going on nationally. It's easy to kind of fall into that trap, but the reality is we don't really have any control here at in the state of Colorado at the state legislature over what happens out in Washington, D.C. We don't really have any control over the presidential election. We need to make sure that we stay focused on the state of Colorado.
And do you think in a presidential election year, because there is so much political news out there and currently right now, there will be less attention played to statehouse issues?
I think just because the general public doesn't hear statehouse issues quite as much because the presidential election, quite frankly, they have a bigger microphone. You see all the commercials, you see all different stuff that's out there. It basically dominates social media. So unfortunately, that is something that has a tendency to take over.
When you look back at sessions historically, you can kind of pinpoint, hey, these were the few things that rose to the top and ended up taking a lot of time. The most recent session, you know, school testing and trying to figure out the right parameters around that. And I know not everyone's happy with that outcome, but there was a compromise and an agreement reached. Do you have any ideas now about what you think might be some of the big issues?
Every year we have to do a budget for our state. That is always a big issue. It doesn't matter if it's a year where we have excess money, if it's a year that we don't have enough money. And this year, going in, looking at the forecast for our revenue, it looks like the revenue is going to come in lower than what we had projected and what we were needing to basically fund all of our mandated spending, and so I think you're going to see cuts that will have to happen this year. And so how we make those cuts, that'll dominate the session this year.
And I know in the past you've worked a lot on trying to get more transportation funding. Is that still going to be a priority of yours?
Absolutely. That is something that we feel that it's not a Republican issue, it's not a Democrat issue, it's not an independent issue. From the mom trying to get her kid to soccer practice, to the kids riding the school bus, to the farmer trying to get his goods from one place to another, transportation is an issue that affects everybody. We're seeing our infrastructure continue to not be up to par. The reality is our state is growing and our infrastructure isn't keeping up with that.
With the shootings in Colorado Springs in October and November, the talk of gun control has come up again. Do you think there's going to be some legislation that may have some bipartisan support around public safety? I know the GOP doesn't support restricting access to guns, but is there some other avenue of legislation you think both caucuses are going to work on, or what discussions have you heard around that issue?
Honestly, I haven't heard a whole lot of discussions that are out there. I think there was some gun control type of legislation that happened a few years ago. I think there were some recall elections and things that happened as a result of that. So I don't know how willing some people are going to be to carry that type of legislation.
And I know there's going to be a bill looking at full-strength beer and wine sales in grocery stores, and there will be a measure going to voters in November if the legislature doesn't pass something. It's been tried for years at the legislature. Talk about where we are with that and where you stand.
You're right. We have seen several years, I think we skipped last year, but almost every other year that I've been here, we've seen some kind of legislation come through. The reality, I think that's probably something that's best dealt with outside of the legislature. I know there is a talk to take that to the ballot. I think if the people of Colorado really want that, then I think we should allow them to decide on that.
Thanks. We were joined by Republican House Minority Leader Brian Del Grossa. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
Speaker of the House, Dickie Lee Hollinghorst, is entering her second year as the leader of the chamber. She's also term limited at the end of the session. Benta Berkland interviewed Hollinghorst about her priorities.
Speaker Hollinghorst, thanks for being here.
I'm delighted.
So what's going to be your big focus coming into this session?
From a very general perspective, I like to call it sustaining and improving Colorado's way of life. And that means a lot of things. It certainly means preserving our public lands and preserving that beautiful view of our mountains that we all love and one of the reasons we live here in Colorado, protecting our air and our water for future generations, all of those things that are so important to us as a state. But it also means dealing with jobs in the economy. We still have plenty of work to do on that. Making sure that our education system works well and that it's adequately funded, putting that all together with good fiscal policy and a budget that works for the people of the state of Colorado.
Describe what you think some of the key issues around the budget will be this session.
Well, we have a bit of a thicket that has to be cut out of, and it relates to the taxpayer bill of rights, and it relates to the fact that we now are in a situation where all of the additional money that we collect in revenues has to be capped and refunded, and generally speaking, it's not very much to individual residents of the state of Colorado. That money, and we've heard this loud and clear over the last year or so from our constituents, that they would much prefer to have that invested in important infrastructure like transportation and making sure we have the best education for our kids. We have a legislative fix to that. We're going to be working on that. We don't know how far we'll be able to go, and it's something that's a priority for me.
We have split control at the State House where Republicans control the Senate. So do you think that'll be the biggest challenge, making sure you can get enough GOP members on board?
That'll be one of our challenges. And of course, that's the challenge of this next session, is to try to find ways that we can work together with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle in the House, and certainly with the leadership from both the Republicans and the Democrats in the Senate. I'm confident that we have the ability at least to talk about those things, and I hope we will be able to work out issues, particularly as they relate to the budget.
You've supported allowing local communities to have more control over energy development in their areas, and right now we have two cases before the state Supreme Court, Longmont's fracking ban and the five-year moratorium that Fort Collins voters passed. A decision by the court is expected in the spring. How does that impact oil and gas legislation this session?
It may have some ripple effect. We have members that are looking at oil and gas legislation. Whether or not they will introduce them will depend on the stakeholder processes as they're involved in and trying to find good ways to legislate. But this goes directly, in my opinion, to the Colorado way of life. We have serious issues with interface in urban areas between oil and gas development, which is basically a heavy industrial operation, and residents and homeowners whose property rights may be affected, among other things, and their health. So we're looking at legislation that will ensure fairness there, and that's a very important part of our platform this year, is fairness for everybody.
So you're in a position as Speaker to manage the chamber, and you have a lot of control over which bills pass, which bills fail, and then along with that, you get credit when things go well, and you get blamed sometimes when things don't go well. Your thoughts coming into your final session?
When I first started almost 8 years ago, I never imagined that I would be doing this, but I also consider it a great honor and a privilege to be Speaker, and I try to do the very best job I can. And if blame comes with that, that's fine. If I get a little credit here and there, I don't mind. And I'm looking forward to a final session and really letting folks have it when necessary and doing a few fun things along the way.
Thanks. That's Speaker of the House, Dickie Lee Hollinghorst.
Thank you very much. It's nice talking to you.
I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Patrick Fort. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
In 2015, Juan Felipe Herrera was selected to be the Poet Laureate of the United States. He is the first Latino to be selected for this position. Herrera spoke on Tuesday in Aspen as part of Aspen Word's Winter Words series. Patrick Fort talked with Herrera about his poems, which cover topics like identity, bridging gaps in American life, and navigating an increasingly diverse world.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Thank you so much. And big hello to Aspen, for sure.
Juan, you are the son of migrant farm workers in California. How did your upbringing influence your writing and the person who you grew up to be?
Well, you know, it's an amazing story. I grew up in those fields in the San Joaquin Valley, Central Valley of California, and my parents, you know, they're kind of they were farm workers, and they were from early 20th century, and my father was born in 1882. So they brought with them a lot of, a whole other world, a whole other culture, a whole other way of seeing the world. And in addition to being farm workers and telling me stories and just being quiet also, a lot of silence and a lot of language at the same time. So all that has shaped me.
And in what ways? You mentioned silence, but also language.
Language, yes, a lot of stories, you know. The TV was not available. Stories from the real experiences from the late 1800s and from the early 1900s through the mid-20th century. And they were told in their own, their own voices. So I heard a lot of stories, a lot of beautiful language in the real voices of my parents, you know, their story voice, their personal voice, their memory voices, and in the case of my mother, her performance of those stories.
And were there any stories from your childhood that kind of really pushed you to do something, that kind of said you wanted to write about this later, or maybe things that once you became a writer, you were very, very set on writing about a particular moment or story?
One of the very first stories is my father telling the story of leaving Mexico, Chihuahua, the northern state, and saying, I'm never going to come back. I have to go. I'm a man now, and it's time for me to move on. And actually, I'm going to El Norte. I'm going to Denver, Colorado. And he did that. He jumped on a train without anything, 14 years old, a laborer. And he worked the land since he was a child. And he got in that train and he crossed that border. And the train, one of the stops was in Denver, Colorado. And he got off and he began his life as a ranch hand, as a cowboy, and as a railroad worker. And he would say, "No, hacía tanto frío que cuando escupía se convertía en cuadritos de hielo, Juanito. No, it was so cold that when I got to Denver, Colorado, and I jumped out of the train, I spit on the ground, and then and then it turned into cubes of ice." I think he was just telling, you know, you know, it was that cold.
The Arts and Culture Desk at Aspen Public Radio is funded by the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation with a mission to support the arts, community, and outreach.
The final step of contract negotiations between the Roaring Fork Transportation Authority and its bus drivers is set for approval this week. Allison Bechtesh reports.
Union leader Ed Cortez says there were no stipulations that were asked for that were not achieved in some way during contract negotiations. RAFTA Operations Director Kent Blackmer represented the organization during the four-day process and credits the union for a well-prepared set of bargaining options.
We clearly understood what their objectives were, so we were in a position then to go back and review what their demands were and try to come to an agreement as to what we thought we could reasonably negotiate and what we couldn't.
Drivers' wages will now be based on longevity rather than merit. New drivers will see almost a dollar per hour increase this year. The agreement states that drivers cannot strike during the three-year period of the contract. The deal adds almost $200,000 to RAFTA's 2016 budget.
Colorado's Department of Education confirmed Monday that students in the Roaring Fork Valley will still be able to take the ACT this spring. Again, Elise Thatcher.
The widely used test is taken by 11th graders to assess how ready a student is for college. In Colorado, it's also been a tool for tracking student achievement. The state's education department decided in late December to switch all schools to the SAT. Rob Stein is chief academic officer for the Roaring Fork School District and says allowing juniors to take the ACT this spring is a big deal.
There's a lot of relief because there was a lot of uncertainty about changing with very short notice to a totally different test.
Aspen Schools Superintendent John Malloy had a similar reaction to Monday's announcement.
Certainly, it reduces a great deal, I think, of anxiety and stress.
Education officials said switching from the ACT to the SAT is better for analyzing what students are learning in Colorado schools. 10th graders this spring will take a version of the SAT to prepare them for the full switch in 2017. Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
The 65th year of winter school festivities starts this afternoon in Aspen. Aspen Public Radio's Patrick Fort reports.
Ice carving, fat bikes, and fireworks are all part of the Winter School festivities that kick into high gear today. The free events start at 4 p.m. with Winter Sculpt, hosted by Anderson Ranch Art Center. Three teams are selected to carve 8 square feet of ice in 2 days. Sculptures are judged on Sunday. The Aspen Chamber of Commerce hosts the Winter School events. A representative said Wednesday the next few days of activities are a good example of how Aspen comes together during the winter.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Allison Bechtesh.
And I'm Patrick Fort. To hear this show again or download a Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.